So to wrap up, just a brief insight into how we get some of those facts and figures on one particular species, the Eurasian woodcock, one of 8 species globally, by far the most numerous, numbering in the region of 14 to 16 million individuals worldwide. In Britain and Ireland, we're in a very privileged situation in that we see woodcock year-round. So we have our own resident breeders, and at this time of year, we get a large influx of migrant birds pushed off their breeding grounds by cold weather and visiting us for the winter. So you can see in orange there the extent of the breeding grounds right through Scandinavia, right through into eastern Russia. Those orange areas only hold woodcock in the breeding season. As I say, they're pushed off at this time of year as soon as it gets cold, because clearly it's a bird that feeds. It has that long bill for a reason. It feeds in the soil, on earthworms, other soil invertebrates, and as soon as the ground freezes, it's unable to do so. The yellow areas, along with France and northern Spain, as I say, we see woodcock year-round. And then the areas in red, the Mediterranean fringes, are places where woodcock only occur in winter. It might not be a key quarry species for a lot of people in Britain, but certainly throughout Europe it's widely hunted, and in places like Italy and Greece, they're shooting in the order of 1 million birds each winter. I'm going to start with a bit about our resident breeding woodcock and then come on to discuss some more recent work on migrants. Back in 2000, there was a lot of concern about figures produced by the British Trust for Ornithology, and at that time, or shortly afterwards, the woodcock was amber-listed. The government has a traffic light system which it reviews every 5 years and categorises all the British breeding species. At that time, woodcock was amber-listed. We were very lucky that it wasn't red-listed, and the only reason it wasn't was because of the confidence limits on the BTO figures. If there'd been tighter confidence in the estimates, woodcock would have gone on the red list. But you'll see the population estimate that the BTO came up with at that time, which I immediately questioned, and as an organisation we doubted. Those numbers are extremely low. We know that woodcock's a widespread species and that to the average birder, he doesn't or she doesn't encounter woodcock on a regular basis, particularly in the summer. But I did find the trend that they were suggesting plausible, both from personal experience and talking to others. The issue we were faced with at the time was that the BTO figures were the best we had. So I was tasked with coming up with a species-specific method for better quantifying the abundance of this unique and peculiar bird. I had a breakthrough when I started recording the calls of individual woodcock and was able to show that, just like us, they have unique, individually distinctive voices which are maintained throughout their lives. And hence we were able to establish a relationship between the activity at a wood and the number of individual males. We teamed up with the BTO in 2003 and came up with a population estimate 9 times greater than that previously estimated by BTO. And I think in fairness to them, they were well aware that general bird surveys weren't particularly good for species like woodcock, some of the owls, nightjars, and that species-specific surveys were important to get a better estimate. So some reassurance that actually the size of the breeding population was far bigger than was previously being touted. But you'll see that we repeated that survey, a random survey, with over 900 surveyors last year. And it very much confirms the trend that the BTO have put out. And actually they produced another breeding bird atlas this time last year, which suggests a 29% range contraction in our resident breeding woodcock. Just to give you an idea of the current situation, I'm talking about occupancy of woods now. So woods where at least one roding male was recorded. You'll see as we head north and east, the areas in green that fill those pies give the percentage occupancy. So you can see that greater occupancy as we head north and east. But actually, we've gone from 35% occupancy in 2003 down to 29 in the space of 10 years. And only two regions have actually recorded an increase in occupancy. So some concern about our resident birds, and we've actually just taken on a PhD student who's going to look at this in more detail. I have a whole range of hypotheses about what might be going on. But I don't think we ought to lose sight of the fact that shooting will undoubtedly be raised, and the PhD student will be looking at that as one avenue. Personally, I don't believe it's driving the decline, but I think we need to be able to fend off questions. I think it's reassuring to look further afield in Europe. There are three other countries now doing similar surveys based on our method. And you'll notice, if you look at the registrations per hour column, that actually woodcock never breed at particularly high densities. But you go to somewhere like Russia, where the forests are far larger and more extensive, and whereas in Europe we're recording perhaps on average 30% occupancy of our woods, they're recording on an annual basis through a random survey 85 to 90% occupancy. And those, of course, are the birds that we see in winter. When we look at bag records, again, if anything, we're looking at a slightly increasing trend in winter. And I think we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that actually we're on the edge of the range. We're on the edge of the breeding range, and it may just be climate change. We shouldn't lose sight of the fact that actually historically woodcock haven't been as numerous as they are now. So just bear it in perspective. Which takes me on to woodcock migration. They turn up in some quite unusual places when they're exhausted at this time of year. This one photographed on Clye Beach a few autumns ago. Why do we want to study migration? Clearly the woodcock's a habitat specialist, so it's potentially susceptible to habitat degradation, and I've mentioned climate change. But I thought you'd be interested to be aware that along with Norway, Poland, the Baltic states, we're one of the few countries in Europe that does not require statutory bag recording of migratory species. And you'll notice the hatching for some of the countries there. Those are countries that have now introduced annual bag limits on woodcock. So in France, for instance, a hunter is issued with tags which he has to, by law, fit to the feet of woodcock that he's shot. He's not allowed to shoot more than three birds per day or 30 in a season. Now, I'm slightly dubious about whether that actually results in more sustainable harvesting of this species, but I think it's important to be aware that it's on the radar. And I think it's important to also be aware that the funding that I've received for our migratory work has been from individuals who are perhaps concerned about this and would prefer to have a better understanding of the ecology of the species and be in a position, an enlightened position, to make their own decisions on a local basis about what is sustainable, because ultimately you know your own patch far better than a politician at Westminster who's dictating. So what do we want to know? Obviously the origins of our migrants, where they're coming from, but a lot more than that, the routes they take, where they stop over, and how much they get pushed around by weather. Ringing doesn't really tell us that, for two reasons, both temporal variation in ringing effort and spatial variation in hunting pressure. So we get a biased picture. But we live in exciting times because there are emerging techniques that enable us to study bird migration in far more detail, not just woodcock, but for a whole range of other species. Some of you have kindly provided feathers for a study, a PhD student that I had a few years ago, looking at hydrogen isotopes in woodcock feathers. Hydrogen is a very good one because these isotopes are known to vary geographically across the globe, and they're sampled annually in rainwater. So the first step was to validate the fact that actually these are a sample of 40 birds collected across the breeding grounds in summer. Just validate the fact that actually in woodcock feathers sampled, the isotope values matched those in rainwater. And it's not surprising because earthworms constitute a large proportion of woodcock diet and earthworms are largely water. So that meant we were able to sample feathers in winter and come up with an unbiased insight into where our birds were originating. So I put up 250 birds here sampled in southern Scotland, and you can see that those originate mainly from Scandinavia and Finland. Watch closely, and we go to West Wales, and you can see that the distribution shifted, and we include the Baltic states. And as you come down into Cornwall, for instance, we move further into Central Europe. So it's suggestive of mixing of migrants from different breeding grounds on the same wintering areas, but broadly parallel migration routes. I then wanted to follow the routes taken by individual birds. I won't go into the details, but we started with relatively cheap light-sensitive tags, which give us the bird's location to within about 150 kilometres. Two points to make. Before we did this, we had no insight whatsoever into the migration strategy of this bird. As soon as we put these tags on, it was clear that actually they were making long flights up to 650 kilometres in 24 hours, and then they were resting for a week to a fortnight to recover from those flights. We've now moved on to more sophisticated techniques that relay the data to us in near real time. Deployed 36 of these satellite tags. And you can see the importance of northwestern Russia there. We get a lot of the birds going to northwestern Russia. But perhaps what was most astounding, most of those birds are going 3,500 kilometres. We've now had three birds that have been out to central Siberia, just over 7,000 kilometres, 4,500 miles, and they're making a round trip. Two of those birds have been back to Cornwall, exactly the same place where they were tagged in winter, and then out to exactly the same breeding ground. We didn't get any go quite so far in 2014, but we're also getting some interesting insights into the routes these birds are taking. So we get a number that do this sort of thing. They seem to be minimising that sea crossing. So they either skirt the Baltic or they go through Denmark, southern Sweden, and cut across to Estonia that way. Another bird that illustrates the sort of Baltic route, tagged in Norfolk in 2013. The 2013 data in red and the 2014 data in white. You'll notice it's gone to breed in Finland. But last winter, bear in mind that 2013 was a very cold winter, last winter was a very mild one. It got back to a site where it stopped on the way out in spring in 2013 and stopped most of the winter at exactly the same site in northern Germany. It did actually get as far as the Netherlands, but then it's undertaken its spring migration from there. So clearly some evidence that these birds not only know their breeding sites and their wintering sites, but they're aware of good stopping off points en route. And I'm sure many of you are aware that we've got a website that gives a lot more detail and documents some of this. Birds going to Norway might take 3 weeks. Birds to central Siberia are taking up to 8 weeks. And I'll finish just by emphasising that site fidelity. We do a lot of ringing as well as fitting these expensive tags, and an issue that I'm particularly interested in providing more advice for shooters on is the impact of cold weather on the condition of birds and better advice on when and when not to shoot. As part of gathering data for that, we do a lot of ringing, which is highlighting this issue of site fidelity. At two sites in Wales and in Cornwall, we estimate about 70% site fidelity of adults. So once a woodcock has found a good wintering site in its first winter, it seems very inclined to come back to the same site to winter. And the picture on the left just illustrates that, a bird that I ringed in a particular field back in 2009 and recaptured 4 winters in a row in exactly the same field. I find it quite astounding if you think that bird has gone 14,000 kilometres in the meantime. Thank you.
Has that been called?
No, that was in Wales. I'm sorry, John.